Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 27th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I can't wait to hear this story.
Every once in a while, I have something like this happen, and I put it on the show notes, and I keep it very vague, just to pique your interest.
Yes,
I know you tend to kind of fall asleep and drift off when I'm doing my stories, particularly when they're not really focused on poker.
So, right.
You know, I don't want to give you the whole cow. I want you to milk it.
Oh, I think you're the one milking it, buddy.
All right, so last night, Laura and I are out at Hooters having our chicken wings, and all of a sudden this big, huge RV pulls up in the parking lot. And it's like a Rockin' Road Grill or something like that on the side of it, and we're like, oh, that's a pretty big food truck, right?
Yeah.
And what is a food truck doing at Hooters? There's already good food already here, right? So the our bartender is like, oh yeah, that's the Flock of Seagulls guy.
What?
And we're like, no way! Even though we have no idea anybody in Flock of Seagulls, of course, right? So this guy gets out, all looks like a rock star and stuff, right? And his little entourage, and they come in and get chicken wings. So I'm Googling. It turns out it's Eddie Berner, the lead guitarist for Flock of Seagulls.
Wow.
Hanging out in my Hooters, which, by the way, is the original Hooters, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Pretty awesome, right?
Yep.
And getting ready to leave, we see him just kind of hanging out. So I go up and I'm like, "Hey, Eddie, can I get a photo?" And he's like, "Sure, mate." So I get a photo. Laura's off to the side, and I'm like, "Come on, you gotta be in this." And he's like, "Yeah, come on, you gotta be in this." So the three of us get in, and I was gonna do a selfie, you know, because that's what I do, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's like, "No, let's do this right." And he had one of his entourage members take my phone and shoot the picture, right? And, I have my Ante Up hat on. I don't normally wear it out, but I was wearing my Callahan Auto Parts t-shirt from Tommy Boy, and the Ante Up hat kind of goes well with it, you know, because okay. I'm all about fashion, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you saw that, but then, I have my cell phone case right on the back is our logo, right? So we're all saying cheese and stuff, right? And he's like, "Ante Up, bitches!" And so he shoots the photo. So we got an Ante Up shout out from the lead former lead guitarist of A Flock of Seagulls last night.
Wow.
And had I had a recorder on, that would have been awesome. Wouldn't that be a great bumper?
That's pretty cool.
Ante Up, bitches. I'm Eddie Berner from A Flock of Seagulls.
And I ran.
The best part is I walked back, I was going to the restroom, and all the cooks were singing I Ran. It was awesome.
I got to tell you, they are the band that when you're a kid and you're watching MTV, because that's all you did when you were a kid, and they came on, I changed the channel, and now 30 years later, I'm like, I love that song, and they were awesome, and I'm like, why did I change the channel back then, because I wanted to see, like, Judas Priest and Iron Maiden or something, and when it didn't come on, you just change the channel, and it's like, man, now I love that song. I love playing it on Guitar Hero when I used to play Guitar Hero, you know what, and then that haircut, they bring it up, it's like on Friends, when Friends was on, and Chandler used to have that haircut, and...
Yep.
That's so cool. You met that's so bizarre. So is he like live in this area?
No, he's this Rockin' Road Grill or whatever. It turns out he's really fascinating. I did a lot of research on him after we're sitting there eating chicken wings, right?
Right.
So apparently this Rockin' Road Grill thing. Let's back up. So he's Flock of Seagulls, right? Air do all that stuff, guitarist, right? But I guess his entire life he's been a chef, or really into food, right?
Right.
So obviously he's not Flock of Seagulling anymore. So a couple years ago, he bought this RV and then got it all tricked out, and we didn't get to go in the RV, but apparently, according to the articles, it's got chandeliers and stuff in there. It's like, you know,
oh, it's
MTV
all tricked out.
Pimp
yeah.
Daddy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're driving around the country now filming a reality show. Sounds like they haven't sold it to anyone yet, but they're filming a reality show where I guess they go to restaurants and things and do bits and stuff. I don't know. And then he also caters. You can actually, I guess, rent this RV out and have a party, and they'll cater the food for you and whatever.
That's pretty wild.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So yeah, so he's filming this morning at Hooters and then later today at Frenchie's. But he was just there last night for some late chicken wings, and we were there, ante up bitches.
Ante up bitches. Too bad the camera wasn't rolling then, have it on the show, and if he actually sells the show someday. Ante up bitches.
Yeah, I could have had the guy dig a video and have him do that, right? You know, I don't know how far to press my luck with celebrities.
Yeah,
So you call guitars, you know.
From now on, I think we're going to change the masthead on our magazine to Ante Up Your Bitches Magazine.
Your poker magazine, bitches.
Bitches. That was cool, though. You got a shout-out from him.
Yeah. Pretty neat. And then earlier this week, as if I didn't think this week could get any better, before the Flock Seagulls guy came
right,
out,
right.
Paste Magazine, which I hope some people out in our listener audience have heard of. It's my wife's favorite magazine. And actually, I cried a little because they used to be a print magazine, and she used to get it. And I used to read it as well, too. You know, most of her stuff, whatever. But
yeah, right.
Paste, I really liked. And then, you know, this printing thing is tough, right? And so they actually did something really cool before they suspended their print publication. They actually went to a pay-what-you-want model.
Hmm.
So they used to have subscriptions for, I don't know, $30 a year or whatever, right? And then they just said, you know what? We want you to read our magazine. Whatever you send us, we're going to send you a magazine. So if you send us $1, if you send us $100.
Wow.
Apparently, it didn't work out very well because then they got rid of it. And
now they're only digital.
But they're still digital only, and they do a lot of cool stuff. It's all over the place now. It used to be more music, but now it's, you know, pop culture and travel and all kinds of things. But anyhow, they posted the 6 best cruises for poker players. And you know we're going to be upset if we weren't on this list, right?
Yeah, right.
But 2 of them were Ante Up cruises, Chris.
Nice.
The first one was our Baltimore cruise next month, which unfortunately sold out. But we're still taking bookings, obviously, for the upcoming Boston, Tampa, and Los Angeles cruises. And the LA cruise was one of them that was mentioned in there. And we hope to have the rest of our 2016 schedule finished very soon. So go to anteupcruises.com for all the info. And you, too, can sail on one of the best cruises for poker players.
Yeah, it's cool that it was like specific cruises, because at first I'm thinking, are they going to actually like come up with 6 poker cruise companies to write about? And I'm like, I don't want to read that article. I don't want that article to exist. You know, but then when they said 6 of, you know, so we got a third of
third of the ink, baby.
Yeah, the ink. So that's
the pixels, I guess.
Yeah, whatever they call it. But that's really cool. Excellent. Good job.
All right, so now we'll get into real poker now for the 4 listeners that are still with us. So a battle is brewing over tournament tankers, and I love this term.
Yeah.
And it's brewing with tournament director Matt Savage and serial tanker, that's my word, Jordan Christos at the center, but plenty of others are chiming in, of course. Our former partner Poker News has posted a great article detailing the issue and all the opinions, all kinds of people weighed in, so go check that out. So here's the question, is at what point do players who consistently take their time with decisions adversely affect other players? And do those tankers have a right to complain that tournament structures are too fast, which is what sounds like got this the gasoline on this already smoldering fire?
Okay. I'm going to give you my opinion. And
that's good, because
you may not like it. If this person is habitual, then the second they get the actions on them, the minute they take a look at their cards, they're adversely affecting all players. Because if it's going to be a decision every single time, then they are milking the clock way more than their share of what the clock is. And it'd be one thing if they had a true decision every single time. You know, it's not going to happen. So that bothers me if they're just going through the motions because they want to have the exact same appearance every single time they get their cards or whatever. Hey, find another way to keep, you know, players at bay with figuring out what kind of player you are. You don't need to milk the clock just for consistency's sake. That bothers me. The other thing about, do they have the right to complain that a tournament structure is too fast? No, they have zero right to complain. You are entering that tournament ahead of time knowing what the parameters are. If you don't like it, don't play it. That's how I feel. And I'm sorry. If you think that your money is better than everyone else's, or that your opinion is more important than the people trying to make money on the tournament, not just the players, but the actual casino or poker cruise company or something, hey, you don't have to enter it. You know ahead of time, that almost on every tournament, almost all of them, are you know ahead of time what the structures are going to be, the blind levels, the rebuys, add-ons, that kind of thing. So if you don't like it, how can you complain about it? You shouldn't have gotten in it. You don't say, oh, I really, really, really want to order this squid for lunch. okay, I ordered a squid. And then when they give it to you, you say, I hate seafood. I don't want squid. No, no. You ordered squid. This is what you ordered. Eat it.
It's like a jerk.
Exactly.
Look for snails on her plate. Sir, you ordered it. Doesn't mean I wanted them on the plate.
Exactly. There is no way you should be able to complain about structures for a tournament. You know what I mean? It'd be one thing if everyone entered the same tournament all the time and then they changed it on you.
Right.
Or something. But, I mean, basically, you know what you're entering. You know what you're getting yourself into.
Well, I do think this part of the debate is not so much about a player, a tanker, complaining about the tournament that he's already entered. I think it's more, in the ethos of poker, chiming in on Twitter saying, hey, this structure is too fast or something like that. So essentially saying, I don't want to play this tournament because the structure is too fast. And then what Matt Savage would say is, it's because players like you slow down the tournament.
Right.
If you think the structure is too fast, then you need to act faster, and then it's not going to be too fast.
That's a good point, too. And that goes right back to, hey, the minute you're a habitual tanker, you're affecting everyone. And then, like we said, it trickles down to, okay, since you're going to do this, in the future, we're going to adjust these tournaments because of you, and now you're affecting everyone because of the way you play in this one. And so I just think that if you're doing it for a living and you've got a serious decision on your hand because you're not going to eat that week if you make the wrong one or something, that's one thing. But I mean, there are still people. I go, to a local poker room, I'll enter even if it's just a cash game, they take forever. But these guys think the WPT cameras are on them. Yeah. And they're not. Just fold. You're not going to – half these people that you're playing against don't even understand what you're doing if you're doing it for effect. And if you're not, if it's that really that important, then it can't be habitual. It's important. It's because it's so rare that they say about – especially No Limit Hold'em, it's, 10 hours of boredom and 5 minutes of sheer terror. Okay? But don't make it 10 hours of sheer terror. I can't sit there all day and go through that. It's an interesting thing that, I can understand if you're doing it for a living and you don't want your family's meal to be compromised because someone's trying to push the clock on you all the time. But every single time you got a tank when it's some minor decision, if you're that good and you're a pro, it shouldn't take that long.
Exactly. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm a fast player, so I'm on the wrong side of this argument to begin with. But I think there is a point between once in a while with a big decision point versus every single hand and every single street. And to some people, I don't even think it's for effect. You're right, there's a lot of people that do it for consistency and effect. But I think it goes back to this whole prevalence of ego in poker, doesn't it?
I think so.
People, even if there's not a TV camera on them, people just want people to sit there and stare at them and acknowledge, hey, I'm in control right now. No one else can act until I'm done, so I'm going to sit here and take my time and have you all stare at me and think of how wonderful I am. I think there's players out there that do that.
I do too. I do too. And I see them all the time. You know what, though? There's something that I don't want the show to get too long on us, but you remember in my entire life the one time I had a clock called on me, right?
Yep.
Okay. So we're on our poker cruise, and it was like the first or second cruise we ever had. It might have been the first one. I don't know. But, at that time, I was a pretty decent poker player. And by decent, I mean I sucked, but I was making money once in a while. And so I was taking my poker pretty seriously at the time because we had just started the magazine. I thought, we were still in the throes of getting that stuff, you know, finding ways to make money for the company. And so when I played a tournament, I wanted to make as much money as I could, because at the time we didn't know how much money we were going to make doing this thing. We could have quit after a couple of years. Who knew? So when I was getting really serious about my tournament poker playing and cash games, of course, at that time I was going to make the decision. Either I'm going to not play tournaments anymore because there's so much money to be made of cash, or I'm going to really try to take all these lessons that I'm getting from, you know, Navarro when we had him on the show and everything else, take them pretty seriously. So the one time I actually take my time and really try to put somebody out of hand, this old guy on the ship who I ended up loving at the end of the cruise. By the end of the cruise, I loved him. He was awesome. But at the time, I didn't know him yet, and I'm like, he was like a curmudgeon to me. I'm like, he called the clock on me on my own cruise in my own tournament. And I was like so distraught by that that I was like, you know what? I don't even want to take my time with decisions anymore, because I don't want anybody busting my chops over it. So, I mean, it actually had a negative effect on me. It was like, you know, here I am thinking I'm going to take, but I know it was, you got to take it all in context. We're all on vacation, we're on a cruise ship, and it was like a $100 tournament. But, you know, I was trying to be really good and trying to put this person on the right hand and make the right decision, see if I was going to make a hero call, whatever it was. Right. And he put me on the clock at my own tournament. So when somebody does that to you, it is sort of jarring. And so I can understand. So you would think that these people would not want the clock called on them, and they wouldn't want to be, you know, you got enough stuff to dodge in a game, in a poker tournament. You don't need to worry about ticking people off and becoming this sort of, but I know you say it goes back to the ego where they want to be, you know, yeah. This, but still, hey, come on, how much is enough? I mean, how big do you need to be fed your ego? It's believe me, it bothered me when I, even to this day, it still bothers me that I got called on that clock.
Anybody's ever called a clock on me before.
Yeah, I never have since.
And I can't imagine. I hope I get to that situation where somebody does, because that means I'm actually got a real decision.
Yeah. That's true, too. But, I mean, when I played in that home game tournament back in Connecticut a month ago, whatever it was, there was one decision that I still right now regret, that I didn't call the guy, because I ended up not making money in the tournament anyway. I ended up getting knocked out just short. So if I had called him and I got knocked out, maybe I could have played in the cash game for a little while, but I really thought I was ahead. He was doing that intimidating thing.
Right.
And then I started thinking to myself, oh man, I'm taking too long. Remember that old man who called the clock on you? Don't let these dorks call the clock on you that you don't even know, you know? So I ended up just folding, and I wanted to take more time with it, but I couldn't, because then back of my mind, I thought they're going to call the clock on me. So yeah, just don't be that person. Don't be that tanker unless it's a real legitimate decision.
Yeah, that's the tough thing, is these people aren't violating any rules. I mean, there is a case to be made. I'm sure there's a listener that they're going, hey, it's my right to take as much time as I want, and if you don't like it, you call the clock and I get a minute, you know? So, you know, there's a mechanism in place to deal with it. But it sounds like what it's getting to point now is that, you know, now you're forced to be the guy that calls the clock on the same guy every time,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it just becomes ridiculous, because now you're wasting everybody's time. Actually, I guess you're not wasting any time. You're actually helping people time. But you're bringing floor staff over, and, you know, it just gets – I mean, I've seen – that's the problem I've seen is with these folks in tournaments is, you know, once, all right. Twice, maybe. But any more than that, you don't have those big decision points, at least in a daily tournament in your local room, right? Right. And so once you get beyond that, then people just get frustrated, and then they just start calling the clock on you every time. And it, you know, probably goes back to the feeding the ego, and you probably love it, and that's great. But it's just kind of ridiculous, you know. You know, this is, you know, hard combat at the table, so you need to have all the power that you can have. At the same time, we could be a gentleman at the table, right?
Yep.
And think of our other players, and, you know, if you really need the time, use it. If not, you know. You know, you got seven deuce and you're facing an all-in, you know, come on.
Muck it.
Yeah, move on.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so our Anti-Up update for the week. Don't forget the tournament on RaiderPoker.net this Sunday. Top 20% of the field will win a cruise package for our November 7th sailing out of Tampa. This is a subscription poker site. It's permitted in 35 states in the District and Columbia. And with your $16.95 monthly subscription fee, you'll get a set amount of Raiders to play with for the month. And RaiderPoker.net is going to host the same tournament on April 26th with daily multi-table and single-table satellites leading up to it. So lots of ways to win a cruise on RaiderPoker.net.
Yeah, that's March 29th for those listening after Sunday. It's March 29th. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's sponsor is J-Design Playing Cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up. Check out J-Design's great cards and more at classicplayingcards.com. Comes from Lou. It's from Yankee Lake, New York. A lot of Yankees.
I love that. You think it's just like Derek Jeter hanging on his boat down there?
I know. That's what I was wondering. I'm like, a lot of Yankees floating around down there. What is that?
Oh, to take my wave runner down? I'm like, sorry, man. Only pinstripes allowed here.
Yeah, sorry, buddy. He says, what is the proper etiquette when a player next to you seems to be looking down at your cards as you were first looking at them? Do you say something, risking you're wrong? It's your responsibility to protect your cards, but I try not to look, and on occasion have told someone next to me to be more careful. I can answer it, you can answer it, we can both answer it in unison, whatever you want.
Yeah, you know, I wrote back to Lou just to get clarification, because it seems like what he's talking about is when I'm peeking at my cards, I've got, you know, Snoopy McSnooperson right next to me, you know, craning his neck to look at what I'm peeking at.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, whoa, way wrong.
Dude, what are you doing?
Right, exactly. If it's something else, then maybe we need to talk about it. But it sounds like that's what he meant. So, yeah. Dude, way wrong.
And if you're wrong, say, hey, man, if I'm wrong, sorry, but if you're craning your neck to try to see my cards, you know, we're going to have a problem. And it's just not right. Now, if you're looking at your cards in a way that exposes them to other people, then you have the problem and you need to stop. Because someone, you know, if you as the right person, like you say, told them to be more careful, that's the proper ethical way to do it. But if they continue to show their cards to you because they can't figure out how to put two hands down on the felt and bend up one corner, well, that's not your problem anymore. You know, it's a game of incomplete information. If they're going to help you complete it, let them do it.
That's a great line. I like that.
Thanks, buddy.
I got to say, I don't think I can remember any time where I thought somebody was purposely trying to look at my cards.
I don't either.
I don't know how really I'd react at it. It's one of those things where you just like, you know, you see the naked guy walking across the street and you're like, that's odd. And like a mile later, you're like, was that a naked guy crossing the street I saw back there? Can't be, right? Well, maybe it was. And that's exactly what I think it would be. I'm like, there's no way this guy's trying to look at my cards, is it? Come on.
I know. I don't get it. And, I mean, maybe you should revisit the way you look at your cards. Because I think if somebody was going to be someone like that, where they're going to try to look at your cards, I would. I'm not accusing him of this. I'm just saying.
I know where you're going.
Yeah, you're giving them some reason to think that they can see your cards.
They can actually see it, right?
Yeah. Okay. So maybe just revisit the way you're looking at your cards, just in case. Because if there is a habitual person next to you that likes to try to do that, if you're doing your thing and he can't see him, he's going to give up. He's not going to keep trying every time. But if you're somebody who's there are people like that all the time where they just pick them up. And I'm like, what are you doing?
Right,
you're picking up your cards. The whole world can see them. Don't do that.
But yeah, assuming you're peeking correctly and concealing and you got Craney McCranerson right next to you, then I think the proper thing is to politely say, hey, dude, come on.
Yeah.
It seems like you're trying to pick up my cards. And I guess that's what Lou's getting at. He's like, you know, boy, if you say that and the guy flies out there, what are you talking about? You're exposing your hand. I'm trying hard not to look at it. Then you cause a big scene. But I think you got to say something. You can't just let it go. And if it turns into something, it turns into something. But and then you could always back up and say, hey, all right, sorry, man. It seemed like you were trying to peek. And now we cleared the air. And now if he cranes on the next hand, then I like to say I'm going to cold cock him, but I've never cold cocked him in my life.
Oh, yeah, no. I would say something to the effect of, hey, anybody who leans into me like that better buy me dinner first. I tell you right now, pal, because if you get any closer to me looking at my cards, it's going to be a problem.
Oh, man.
All right. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com and we'll have Golden Nugget Las Vegas poker director Sam Minatello tell you how he would have ruled. This week's sponsor is TournamentButton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built into them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo and ask about the Annie Up logo version. Use code ANTIUP for free shipping. Comes from Tavis Margers.
Awesome name.
Says, yeah, that's awesome. He says, in a cash game in a Las Vegas casino, a very large pot gets a showdown, with one player calling and other players all in. The player that was called quickly turned over his hand, and the dealer announced, player has a full house. The player that called the all-in picked up his cards and held them in front of himself, staring at them, and then nodded his head and said, you got it. Before releasing his cards, the player to his left says, what are you doing? You got a straight flush! The player looks over the board again. Table's a straight flush. Floor is called and awarded the pot to the player with the full house, saying the player with the straight flush conceded the hand when he said, "You got it." If I have learned one thing in the poker rooms I've played in over the years, it's that if you table your hand, cards speak. Shouldn't the player that tabled the better hand be awarded the pot, regardless of what words he spoke prior to tabling his hand?
James says, "I feel the best hand should win the pot. I'm not a fan of how this hand was tabled, but we would handle that in a separate manner. I don't think players should try to win hands based on technicalities. If I don't have the best five cards, then I should not be stacking the pot."
100% true. I can't even begin to tell you how many times people in Omaha 8 say, I don't have the winning hand, or yeah, you got whatever. And they put their cards down. The dealer says, "No, you have the live deuce," or something like right. that. And it's a fact. Those cards beat your cards. Just because somebody conceded, they didn't muck it. That hand is still being live and still being shown. It's cards speak. So that person should not have gotten that money.
Yeah, obviously this situation is a little more complicated because the guy didn't table his hand right away. He held it up and some other player had to help him, which is kind of what we talked about on a recent show, I think.
Yes,
and that's a problem, and that's what Sam says. You know, we would have handled that separately. But the fact that the hand is tabled now, you won, you lost. That's the way it is. And, you know, this is the one thing, I tell people this all the time when I talk about the Call with Floor and Sam, and what I really love about how Sam approaches this is that this is his big thing. Do not win on technicalities. If you're trying to angle shoot or use some kind of ruling or something like that to win a pot that you didn't have the best cards for, then forget it. Don't do it.
Yep.
You know, obviously you can be upset at how this happened, and I would be upset about how this happened, but I would not be arguing that I should win the pot. You know, I would be arguing that the guy that looked at his hand and told him he had it interfered in my pot.
Yeah.
That I should have won because the other player, for whatever reason, wasn't observant enough to know they had a better hand.
And even that, when you get back to the whole Beau Rivage rules up on the things, is you are responsible, you are charged as a person at that table to make sure the right decision and the right things are happening. So that person didn't do anything wrong by saying you got a straight flush, because that's
well,
the end.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, that's actually an argument that we could have, people could have, is that at what point does that rule come into play? Is it like a rule come into play when a hand is properly tabled, which is what I would think it was?
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think that rule compels you to look at somebody's hand, or if you see it by accident, and say, "Whoa, hey, you got to table that." But, you know, here's the thing. All of this could be avoided if you just turn your cards over.
Yeah.
Without anything, right?
Yeah.
It still amazes me how many people in 1-2 no limit cash games, $40 daily tournaments, just think that, you know, "Oh, somebody's going to get a read on me by seeing my hand. I'm just going to muck it." You know, come on.
But let me ask you this. Now, I want you to be honest with me.
What if I ever lied to you?
Well, I know, but being the poker player that you are, and how long you've been playing this game, and how many times you've entered tournaments, especially smaller ones, how many times did you river a flush, know you rivered a flush, know there's a full house on board, somebody, you know, you call somebody's bet, they say full house, and you muck your cards because you know you're beat. You know what I mean? You don't turn your cards over and go, "Did I possibly win this?" You muck your cards because you know
you're beat, right? I will say, in Omaha, I always turn it over. Because
no, I mean, it was just hold'em. I'm talking about hold'em,
right?
Because this was a hold'em example, so.
Well, no, and I'm not saying I do it all the time, but I'm saying if you don't do it all the time,
right,
I think you're risking losing some pots. And I don't think that the other side of it is by showing people what you play every single time is worth that risk in small daily tournaments and small cash games.
Right, right. Yeah, I wasn't defending not.
Do you see me at the World Series Poker Final table? Yeah, I'm going to be looking at those cards 7 times, make sure I didn't miss anything, and then muck them without showing them. But,
yeah.
You know.
Okay.
That's the other side of it. Just take your time and look at and make sure, hey,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because we're confident in our ability to read the board, but there are times where you may have misread it and may have mucked it. And
oh, I think it happens all the time. Yeah. I mean, you're going for a flush,
yep,
and you didn't see that you had a gut shot straight there and hit that, and that wins. You know, and it happens a lot more in Omaha than it does. But even hold'em, I think that happens often. You know, you're looking for something, or you know, I don't know if other people do this, but. You know, I make the call and turn, and I'm like, I need a 9-6 or a 3 or I don't know, whatever the combination is. or I lose, right? And something else comes, and then I'm like, oh, wait a minute. That card helped me as well. But you get so tunnel vision on the card that you tell yourself you need that you end up mucking without looking at it. So, I mean, a couple lessons, I guess. One, take your time and look. Make sure you didn't miss anything. But if you're worried that you're going to miss something, just take away your hand.
Yeah. I remember how naive I was when before we even, like, started the show, I think. Never mind the magazine. I remember once playing at Silks. And it was like their $45 Saturday tournament, that big one that they put like 11 people at the table, and it was the old Silks.
Right.
I remember driving home and thinking to myself, I'm like on racetrack road, so I'm still not even that far away from the place, and realizing that when I went all in with my 8-9 of spades, that I ended up making a straight on the river, but no one else saw it. And so I'm contemplating calling them from my car and saying, hey, I made a straight on that hand. Can I come back and get, you know, that's how naive I was. I thought that they would like say, oh, we made a mistake. Let's go to the Eye in the Sky and we'll put you back in the tournament. You know, that's how stupid I was. Cause you think, you know, it was
stupid. It's naive.
It's naive. It was naive. Yeah. And at the time I was like, oh man, you know, and now I think, yeah, oh duh, table your hand. It was a tournament hand, but nobody saw it. I did table my hand, but nobody saw it. When I thought back to my hand, what the board was and what, and who had beaten me. I thought, wait, that 9 made a straight. And I'm like, I really was like thinking about, I didn't have their phone number because back then I didn't even have a cell phone that like a smartphone. So I, you know, I would have had to turn around and, but that's how naive I was. So
the payphone and put a quarter in.
Always put your hand down, but still look at it because even someone else could misread it. So
information, city state, please.
Yes. Hey, guess what? We get to complete O'Malley's move today. Let's refresh our memories. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're at a 2-5 casino cash game. We've been playing well and running lucky, and as a result, we've more than tripled our buy-in. We sit with 1,700, and have an image of the table captain. However, this has given us somewhat of a target on our back, so while we can push some of these players around, others have been playing back at us somewhat regularly. The blinds post, the under-the-gun folds, and the plus-one calls. The MP folds, and we're next to act with the ace of diamonds, queen of clubs. We make it $20 to go. The hijack and plus-one both call, and we're going to a flop with about $60 in the pot. The 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 6 of spades comes down, and the plus-one checks. This would normally be a situation where we'd put out a continuation bet, but with one to act behind us, we decide to check. The hijack checks as well. With $60 still in the pot, the turn is the ace of spades. The plus one checks again, and at this point, we decide to make a bet. We lead out for $40. The hijack, a loose aggressive type with about $400, makes a raise to $125. The plus one folds, and it's on us. The hijack knows how to play, but can overplay at times. However, he has been known to set traps, and is the type that sees us as a target, not the captain. What is it this time? What's the move?
Alright, I think our opponent has a pretty wide range here. Could be anything from air trying to steal it from us, to one pair, two pair, a set, even a flop straight. A lot of those hands beat us, obviously, but we beat a lot of them as well. I think I'm inclined to call and check the river and see what his next move is. He has less than 300 left, so if he's bluffing or light, the pressure will be on him and not us on the river.
Yeah, I'm going to go the other route here. I'm going to fold.
Good, finally.
I know, I've stopped agreeing with each other, but I am folding. I really feel like we're beat. It just seems, I mean, I'm not here, I'm not playing with these people, but it just feels weird. That move would be made. I really feel like we're beat here. So the only reason to call is because this guy can't really do too much damage to us. But if you think about it, you're playing a 2-5 game. You know, given how it's played, yeah, we hit our ace, but we really can only beat a bluff. To me, it feels like you can't really beat it in the way it's been played. And so,
well, I guess that's what I'm saying is, you know, we're on the turn right now, so. On the river.
Are you prepared to call that 300 on the river when you check again, though? That's the thing, and a blank comes. I'm not. I'm just
right,
not.
But I mean, but here's the thing. If he has air, he's light, the pressure's all on him at that point, right?
Uh-huh.
doesn't mean that he's not going to stick it all in with nothing, right? Uh-huh. But we're making him sweat a little bit more rather than us because we've got him covered by a lot, right? So if we call here and then and he does, he is light. I mean, if he's strong, he's going to, you know, bet anyhow, right? And then we're going to have to make a decision at that point. But I think the pressure is on him. So I'd like to see him sweat a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, I just I don't want to. I'm not in the habit of calling $125 to see somebody sweat. You know, to see. I'm just not. I mean, I feel like we've put a couple of bucks in this pot.
Can you see that on your list of hobbies? Like your resume?
Yes. Like walks on the beaches.
$125 to see people sweat.
Like sunsets on the beach. Calling $125 to make people sweat. I mean, really. Sounds like a commercial for antiperspirant or something. But
oh, love it.
I don't know. I really feel like we're beat here, so I'm gonna lay it down, and if I'm wrong, hey. If I'm right, hey. But
here's the thing: is I'm just not usually in a situation where I've got a crap ton of chips more than my bonus.
That's
so
true.
I really don't know how to play it. I'm just giddy that I can do it now. I can throw my weight around.
Yeah,
maybe it's wrong.
That's true. And you know, you'll get some advertising if you do end up calling this guy. But anyway, well, let's see what happens.
Hello again. What's this guy's angle? Is he thinking he can push us off a weak ace? Did he flop a monster? These players are sometimes the toughest to play against. Oftentimes, they are extremely hard to get a read on, and can play their stacks with reckless abandon. So while it is very difficult to get a read on this guy, I'm going to take a look at the situation and our image. We are table captain, and we've got this guy covered over 4-1. I know this isn't a very lucrative way to play, but there is something to be said for not being pushed around. If we call and lose, it might make the next guy more weary to bluff at us. Plus, we can tighten up our image. If we call and win, it helps us further develop our, as Vic G would put it, winning image at this table. So even if we call and lose, I'm thinking we're in somewhat of a win-win situation here, and our chip stack can more than take the hit. We decide to play our table captain card, and we make the call. Our opponent confidently turns over pocket tens for a flopped set. We're drawing dead. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying I wouldn't try this angle too often, but sometimes you've just got to show them you aren't scared of playing a big pot. I hope to see you on the felt.
I think O'Malley made a good point about looking beyond this hand and making this decision and deciding to make a borderline call here when it can't hurt our stack too much. But it lets the table know that we won't be pushed around. And, of course, we also let the table know that we'll call lights. So, yeah, I guess I can cut both ways. But but the overall thought, I like the fact because, I mean, this is kind of the problem with Hand of the Week and O'Malley's move sometimes, I think, and where we get criticized from folks. And other times I need to remind folks that, you know, you're talking about one single hand in the middle of this whole thing, right?
Yeah.
And so, really, in a session or a tournament at least, you're not just telling a story on that hand. You're telling a story throughout the whole session or tournament. So sometimes it makes sense to do what seems like a bad move on one hand where it might end up turning out all right for you in order to make it better on another hand later on. That's tough to do, I think.
Yeah.
But there is something to be said for it.
Well, when I heard that he had pocket tens, we were drawn dead, I said, hey, the kid is back. I actually made the right fold, pat myself on the back. But I was a little confused when I heard part two, since we never actually hear what happened on the river, right?
Well, he did say he was drawing dead, which I believe he was, right? Because he had a set of tens. There's nothing we could have got that would have got me.
Right, but what I'm saying is they still had a river bet to make, and we called the turn
true.
Bet.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
There's no river bet made. I don't, I'm assuming that.
That's right, yeah. So maybe.
So
yeah.
I'm
you're
trying
right.
To
that was confusing.
Yeah.
I think,
I'm trying to think that maybe he was on the river that they shoved and we called or something. There's something in between there that I don't know what happened. But obviously we got to the river somehow and or maybe he shoved or something. I don't know. But we called and we found out we were drawn dead. But, yeah, it sounds like he went to the river and made that call somehow. Anyway, that's interesting that when you have enough chips, you know, you're doing sort of the Daniel Granu thing where you're kissing the money goodbye for information almost.
Right, yeah. You got to be careful when you do it, but it's a nice position to be in, right?
Absolutely.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
It's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at AnteUpMagazine.com. This week's sponsor is PokerRadius.com, Poker's newest social networking site and home of the Ante Up group discussions. And this comes from Sean from Scranton, PA.
Yeah. I think he works at, was it? Dunder Mifflin, yeah.
I'm sure he doesn't get that ever.
Never. I'm sure nobody ever says that to him, ever.
You know, I'm almost, it's kind of weird because, you know, when you travel, people ask, where are you from? You know, I got to think anybody from Scranton has got to be like, can we just get 12, 20 years in the future now? So no one can remember the stupid show because everybody's going to go, oh, Scranton, do you work at Dunder Mifflin?
At that point,
I would
say,
Dwight Schrute?
I'm from Pennsylvania. You know, I wouldn't say the town. Then when they ask, say, you know, the west or the east side or something, you know. I don't know, but
the west side.
It's got to be interesting.
I'm on the other side of the tracks. Don't mess with me. Don't even ask.
But you know what, though? When it comes to us, I always think of Pennsylvania as two halves because of the magazine.
It's very different halves.
You know, Philadelphia is on the east, and then Pittsburgh's on the west, and they're different, totally different. Like, it's like a different state, you know? And I think of the coverage areas that we do, and the, you know, so I always think of the west and the east side of Philadelphia. I mean, of Pennsylvania. It's a huge state, too. It's pretty big, so.
Excellent.
Sorry for the divergent there.
At some point, we should talk about this hand.
Yeah, let's go.
All right, Sean says, long-time listener to the show. I've listened to every single podcast from Annie Up with an exclamation point. Appreciate that much. His first submission to the podcast.
Jeez.
And he has a 1.5 hour commute to work. Wow.
Well, we'll film most of that today.
Yeah, all right. But, you know, a lot of people actually in the Scranton area do, so I don't know if he's going into the big city or what, but
yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
Hour and a half, man. My longest commute was 27 minutes my entire life. Now it's 6 seconds. all right, so he's at a 1-2 no limit table at Mohegan Sun in PA, near the Poconos.
Right.
Table is full of loose passive players, and I've seen a lot of limping preflop. The villain in this hand says he recognizes me, and that the last time we played, I took all of his money.
Nice.
Now, I do not recall this player. He may have been confused with somebody else, but I smile and nod in his direction after his comments. Of course, I mean, what else are you going to say? No, that wasn't me. That's right, man. Bow down to me.
Yeah, you know, I get that. Every once in a while, when we go and play the tournament over at Daytona Beach or something, the guys will say to me, oh, last time you played, you knocked me out. I'm like, dude, there's no way, you know. But, I mean, I don't remember that, huh? You know, but I get that a lot. I'm like, are you sure it wasn't the other way around?
Awesome. All right, well, he says, my image is tight aggressive. I've been playing for squiggly 2 to 3 hours. And that's interesting, a squiggly in the 2 to 3.
Yeah, right? Usually it's just the money.
Yeah, because, I mean, if it's 2 to 3, then it's a squiggly.
The squiggly is implied.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
An implied squiggly.
Yeah.
That's a new term.
That's a new term, yeah.
It could be a new band name.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Opening for Docket tonight.
Taking the stage tonight. It's the implied squiggly. All right, go ahead. Sorry. I had to do the accent there.
Oh, man. let's turn this hand up to 11. Let's see. I've been playing for 2 to 3 hours. Managed to be up slightly. $25. He bought it for $200. So we're sending him about $225.
All right.
Under the gun player limps. The villain is under the gun +1 and raises to $7. Just typical raises were anywhere between $7 and $12. So it's on the low end of the typical raise here. Three collars and the big blind. We look down at King of Hearts, 9 of Hearts.
I already know what's going to happen in this
game. We all do, right? Let's just play along like we don't.
Okay.
We'll be surprised at the end.
All right. Well, to play along, I would imagine I would call. But
really, you would.
Yeah, but it's a big
for the sake of the story. You actually would call.
Yeah, it's a big butt though. I mean, you know, because I like big butts, and I cannot lie.
Cannot lie.
Right, but no, really, this is the big blind. So we already have $2 in. Got raised to 7. There's a ton of money out there already. Almost 30 in the pot or so. All we got to do is call 5. So I'm going to do it, but I'm going to be very, very tight with this hand. If I don't hit 2 pair or like the nut flush draw, like an ace of hearts doesn't come out,
right. Yep.
You know, I'm going to be really, really cautious. So that's the caveat.
That's the caveat.
Yeah, okay. Because there's so many people in this hand that you got to be really strong to take them all on when it wasn't that big of a raise. Because you know what? They said that the typical raises were what? 7 to 12? And he made it 7. But there was a limper already. So by making it the least amount, plus there's already dead money out there, you know, he didn't even make the – so something tells me that I'm not going to really respect what this guy – how this guy plays. Not the hand itself, but if he's not really sure of what to make it when he raises, then he might not even know the strength or weakness of his own hand. So I'm going to be real cautious with the person who says a villain.
All right.
But I'll call.
All right, I got to say this. I've always been inclined to make this call with the same caveat that you have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a question. I'm not making a statement that I do this, but it's interesting because I've been thinking about it more and more when we see these things, because we talk about all this money in the pot and everything like that, right? And maybe there's a case to be made that we have odds here or whatever, but we're talking $5, and we need to hit this thing hard, right?
Yeah.
So we've agreed. Yeah. And I don't know what the odds of hitting it hard would be, you know, if somebody with better math skills can figure it out. But I'm almost thinking I might rather take that $5 and buy 2.5 Powerball tickets. Keep forgetting the $2 now. It used to be $1. Two Powerball tickets and a scratch off. I don't know.
So you'd like 14 million to one.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, if I'm going to risk the money, I want the reward to be worth it. And I don't really know whether the reward is worth it in this case or similar cases.
Oh, man.
I mean, if we hit the best case scenario is that the ace of hearts and another heart comes, right? Not we're not flopped the flush, but we get there at some point, right? And then we have another ace or two in there, and things get crazy, and then we felt someone with a big pot, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can dream, right? Mm-hmm. I can also dream about hitting the Powerball and telling you, hey, kiss off, ante up's yours. I'm going to be on my yacht. It just seems to me that I think we talk ourselves into that. You know, oh, it could hit big, but I'm going to be restrained and nothing bad's going to happen, which is could be completely true. I just don't know whether it's actually worth the $5, this case or another case.
Okay, I'm going to tell you. It is worth the $5.
All right.
At least to invest it in this. Now, if you had said, I might want to take that $5 and buy myself a Pabst Blue Ribbon because the PBR will give me a better experience than painfully watching this hand.
$5.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you'll have a better experience having 5 PBRs than you will what's going to come on this flop and have to deal with that. But, you know, the 14 million to 1 odds of hitting the Powerball or whatever it is. Yeah, I think I'd rather call this here and take my chance. And even so, like you said, $5, if you're wrong, you still got $220 in front of you.
Well, we got a third option, too. We can not call here and not spend that $5 on anything, beer, tickets, or anything. Right,
right. Right.
Which is probably the better way to go.
But. We have another option. We could re-raise and say, these guys don't have anything. Take it down. But
I guess that's my point, is it's easy. I mean, it used to be, I got 2 suited cards, I'm going to call, and then get in trouble, right?
Yeah.
And now, the more we played, we're like, all right, now we've learned, hey, well, it's a crappy hand, but it could flop big. And if it doesn't flop big, I'm disciplined enough to get out. And I'm really thinking that maybe that's not a good enough reason.
All right. Well, I'm going to call and hope I hit big, and if I don't, I'm going to get out. And if I do hit big, I'm going to play it cagey and I'm just going to felt somebody somehow. So,
okay. Let's see. He says, with about $30 in the pot, I only need to call $5. I'm also assuming if I call, the under the gun will call, making my implied odds high. So I make the call out of position. Yeah. My only plans for this hand is to continue only if I smash the flop. I'm trying not to play hands out of position, in my opinion, a big leak in my game that I'm working hard on correcting. Very good. Kudos. The under gun calls and we go to a flop. Flop is queen 10-4, no flush draw. I only have a gut shot. So we did not hit it hard, right?
No, we did not hit it hard.
That's
so
what we're doing. We're checking in.
We're checking and seeing. We're check leaving.
Check leaving.
Yes.
That's funny. Twist. All right, so this is exactly what our hero does. He says, to my surprise, gets checked around, and I get to see the turn for free.
Ooh.
And to my delight, the Jag of Diamonds hits the turn, giving me a straight.
Oh, no.
I was praying to the poker gods for me to get lucky, and they obliged.
Oh, no.
And with $30 in the pot minus rake, it's time for us to act.
Oh, no. Oh, man, I did not want to
kind of see where I'm going with this whole if it doesn't hit me hard thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, this doesn't happen very often, I know, but yeah. It's interesting that, you know, you set yourself up, you're going to be restrained, and then something like this happens, and now, boom. I mean, hopefully we end up winning this hand, but
man.
Seems like in Hands of the Week, we don't win these hands.
Well, remember what I said earlier about the guy who raised, if he's the villain in this hand, then we don't trust that he knows what he's doing because he only made it 7 after a limper in a 1-2 game.
Right.
Now I'm starting to wonder if this guy, because it's hand of the week, if you could put him on a hand like that. Could you put him on ace-king with that raise? Because then you're drawn essentially to an ace now.
Yeah, that would be a problem, right?
Yeah. Could you put that guy on ace-king? If you could...
I clearly could. I'm not saying that that's what he has.
Right. I'm just clearly saying, yeah. If you could, you might want to check again and see if anyone tries to steal it other than that guy and then see what he does.
Right. Oh, that's actually a good idea.
You know, and then if that guy all of a sudden goes crazy, you say to yourself, well, I've got the ignorant end of the straight. I don't have, you know, I don't have the best straight here. Do I want to risk my stack with whatever this guy has? You know, he may set a price that you can just get away with, okay, 2 streets worth, and, you know, you don't have that
right,
much.
Right, just in case you're wrong, right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's difficult. I can't imagine making a straight and folding it. But at the same time, I just don't know what this guy has because of the raise he made pre-flop. It was a weird amount to me. I know he said typical was 7 to 12, I guess.
Yeah, 7 to 12.
But really, you know, with a limper and... Okay, he's raising with. What could he have raised with there with? So he had a limper. So if he's using the gap method or whatever we called it, what was it called where you say you have to have a hand that's good enough to raise,
right. Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever. I mean, this guy limped under the gun, the other guys. So he's not really re-raising a raise. But if you're going to raise and you're further away, you got to have a hand that's at least that good. So would he have ace-king here? Would he have aces? You know, I don't know. But would he have checked ace-king on this flop? Probably. Would he have checked aces? No way. Would he have checked kings? No way.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So he could have ace-king 2 overs, missed it, and hoped to hit his gut shot or his overs. Because, we don't think this guy plays optimally by the raise he made. So, yeah, should he have made a C-bet there and taken it down? Probably. But he didn't, so that goes to his inexperience, maybe. So I still want to be a little cautious here. In a sense, I don't know if there's a flush draw still, because he said it's a jack of diamonds, but he didn't say what the other suits were. So if I'm thinking there's 4 suits on there, I may still check to see what happens and then gauge that reaction on what I'll do after that. So I can't really commit to an action here.
You know, I would bet into this, and you totally convinced me of the beauty of checking and seeing what this guy does. I mean, yeah. Again, we got to take the crappy part of this hand, which is that we're out of position, and make it a benefit.
Yeah.
And I think that's the way to go. I mean, we might lose a little value here. I mean, if we would bet, if he gets checked around again, we're going to lose some value, obviously, or something like that. There's lots of ways to lose value here, but I think you're right. I mean, do that analysis, ace-king does seem pretty likely now, and let's just not commit more than we need to find out.
Yeah, it's a scary... When you think about it that much, about this guy, that raise was weird, and then now he checked that flop. What would he check that flop with? Unless he had maybe a set of queens and he was trying to slow play it, but even
right.
That, you know, you're beating it. So I think that's a peculiar check, and I think we talked about this last week about the fishy checks.
You know, and this raise is kind of like a Sudoku puzzle, too. I mean, it's been a while since you've probably done that.
I've done it, but it's been a while.
And where I get frustrated with those, you get the really tough ones, you know, where there's like, you have to have like 7 pieces of information. You finally like, all right, it's 7 there.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, but when you get that, it's like the greatest feeling in the world, right?
Yeah.
So I know it's kind of a long shot here, but wouldn't it be great if we checked here the under the gun bets and the under gun plus 1 folds?
Yeah.
Then we can't put anybody else in this hand on ace king, right?
Right.
Besides that one guy. So that if you take that guy out of the equation, now we know we've got this hand won.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It may not happen, but yeah. it won't happen if we don't. I mean, I guess we could bet and we get raised by that guy, but
plus you're getting the information. You know, you're checking. So you're gaining information after that check. You get to see what everyone reacts after that and then decide what I'm gonna do if they bet. Yeah. So there's a lot to be said for that too. I don't know. I mean, I if there were 2 hearts on or 2 diamonds, I mean, now that we know one of the diamonds or something, I might have put a bet out there just to see or protect somehow or something. But ace king just seems so likely because it's hand of the week and because, which I shouldn't ever say that because I don't get that benefit when I'm playing live. But it's just something to think about with the way this guy's acted up until now.
All right, let's see what we have in here. Our hero decides to donk bet in the pot and bet $16. He says, I'm hoping somebody with top pair, the backdoor diamond flush draw, or two pair calls. You know, the gun calls, and the villain stares me down and raises to 100. He has about another 90 behind. He says, a few hands ago, the villain re-raised 4x the bet on a 5-5 king board. He got his opponent to fold a 5, and the villain showed 5 tray.
Okay, so in other words, he's not making that bet unless he's got a hand.
Yeah, but he looks like he's also willing to... doesn't have to have the hand either.
No, I know, but right. He probably thought he had the hand with 3-5s when he did that. You know, and again, I think it's going back to this guy's inexperience.
Well, that's true, sir.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yep.
All right, so by betting that amount, he's telling us that he has the nuts or he has 3 queens. And that he checked for to be cute, hoping that he could check raise somebody because it was fishy.
Right.
Because yep. I don't think he would have checked aces or kings on that flop. Plus, we have one of the kings, so that contributes to that, too. Ace King is just going off in my head now, and we almost got what we asked for because we only bet 16. That's not that much money, you know. On the turn, and it's about 30 in the pot. Yeah, okay, you bet a roughly half, which is probably the right amount, you know. But now you're trying to protect your hand at the same time trying to get value of it. So that's a pretty decent bet where you can get away from this hand if you truly believe he has Ace King.
Mm-hmm.
And still, you're still up for the day, you know. You know, you called your 7 and 16, so you're still up $2, basically, or so. Something like that. So, I don't know. I think it's so weird. I just don't know if I can get away from that. But 100 when I don't have the nuts, right. And I don't even have, you know what I mean?
And that Ace King is pretty darn likely.
Yeah, because why would he? What, there's only two hands he could be doing that with, I think.
Yeah.
It's a set of queens. Maybe a set of tens, I don't know. But maybe a set of queens and ace king. I don't think he would have raised king nine. So, yeah, it's either or. It's 50-50 in your head. And you're not getting 2-1 on your money. So, I'm probably
fold. One of these hands that makes you love poker and hate poker at the same time, right?
Yeah.
And when we call and we're right, then we're going to love this. When we call and we're wrong, then we're like, I knew it!
Yeah.
And I think it does show some discipline to be able to walk away from this hand. And even if you don't see it, that happens. I mean... this probably won't go to showdown if we don't call, right?
Right.
And then walk, just get up and walk around and not worry about what he had for the rest of your life. Just say, hey, that's one hand in the billions of hands of poker I'm going to play in my life. And I'm going to let it go and not worry about it. Because if you make that call and you're wrong, it's going to stay with you forever.
Yeah.
Not forever, but you know what I mean.
A long time.
It's going to stay with you longer than if you just fold here and forget about it.
You know, the other thing, too, is, you know how Doyle Brunson and Super System would always say, don't go broke in an unraised pot.
Yep.
I almost feel like this is an unraised pot.
Pretty close to it, isn't it?
Right, yeah. Because it's so little of money and so many people called, it feels like an unraised pot. And I really don't like to go broke when I don't have the... if I don't have the nuts, I don't like to go... you know what I mean? I'm not going to go broke. I mean, I've gone broke having the nuts and then getting sucked out on. You know, that's something that you can't avoid. But here, I don't want to lose my stack or close to my whole stack without the nuts. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that I can't make hero calls and I won't get pushed around all the time, but in this case, I've risked $23 and I could lose 225 total for, or 200 whatever total on king nine straight. That's like the worst straight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, obviously you could have, you know, a smaller straight with 9-8 or something, but I'm just saying it's a terrible straight. And the way the hand played out, he could very well have ace king and make that move. That's a pretty big re-raise.
It is.
So really, is he doing that with just a set when the nuts is out there? So
I guess you can argue too that it's too big of a raise for ace king, right?
Maybe
if he's got the stone cold nuts here.
But again, it's the. I'll get back to the beginning when I said this guy doesn't seem like he's very experienced.
Well, that's true too. That's a good point. Yeah.
And he wouldn't know how much.
I mean, that would have to be the thing. I mean, we'd have to put him on the fact that he's inexperienced, because otherwise, I really can't see. I can't see an experienced player raising $84 with the nuts. I mean, that seems like a ridiculous overbet, even if the flush draw is out there.
He did make it 4 times the bet when it was 5-5.
That's true, too.
King.
Yeah. Right, yep.
So if you did that, that's 4 times 16, $84. It's close to 100. So,
yep.
You know, and he did that when he thought he had the best hand. So it's a tough decision. I mean, this is a lot. It's not really fair to do hand of the week sometimes because this gets back to, are we turning into a Jordan Christos and we're taking all this time to make this decision in a 1-2 game when there's no way you and I are making this much decision time and thinking about all this stuff.
Yeah,
but it's just another way to think about things we're trying to help them with. So to me, I think we're behind and I'm folding. But I do that all the time. I always think we're behind because most of the time they're not writing in with these hands to tell us they won. They're saying, how would you have played it? Because I couldn't get away from it and I lost. So to me, but adding up the other facts that we've mentioned, that this guy seems like he doesn't really understand when he has the great hand and when he doesn't understand how much to raise, and then checking and missing that flop is what a beginner would do. I didn't pair my board, my cards, I mean. I don't have anything. I'm checking. Or, you know, and if he was a decent player and he checks his top set, I don't think a guy who's uneducated in this game would check top set there. I think you'd get excited and bet. So I think this guy missed. I think he has ace-king. And I think he's made it, and I think we're folding.
All right. Well, let's find out. So we go into the tank and review the range of hands we have him on. He did raise preflop, so I put him on ace-ace, king-king, queen-queen, jack-jack, 10-10, 4-4, ace-king, king-nine, unlikely since I have that hand, king-queen, king-10, queen-jack, and a possible backdoor diamond flush draw. Pretty wide range, actually.
Yeah, I don't think he puts him on all those. There's no way you put him on 4-4.
4-4, yeah. He says, with such an overbet, I do not think he'd be betting this much with the nuts, which would be ace-king, obviously. Feels like he just wants to take the pot down right there. I have both players covered and decide my only moves are to fold or re-raise all in. I decide to move all in. Cannot be scared of monsters on the bed, right?
Right.
Under the gun folds. Villain immediately calls and turns over ace-king. Ugh.
I agree with him, though. I do think it's fold or raise all in. I'm not going to call 100 when he's only got 90 behind.
Right.
And you know he's not folding that 90. You're not going to fold if you bet 90, so I probably am raising all in or folding.
Yep, absolutely. River's not an ace, and I lose a large pot. He says, is this just a cooler? Could I have folded to the 100? Could I just call the 100? I reviewed the hand over and over my head. I think my biggest mistake was preflop. Should have just folded a very mediocre hand out of position and would not have gotten myself in this situation. Yes. But I guess that goes back to what I was talking about, is that, you know, we're so sure that we're going to be able to get away from this hand if we don't hit it big. Yeah. And then, I mean, this is, again, a perfect storm here, right?
But
we did hit it big. We hit a straight on the turn, but it wasn't the nuts, and then got ourselves in trouble when we lost all our stack.
Yeah.
If we just, you know, throw those hands away at the beginning, then we don't have the tougher decisions later on.
It's so true, but it's so hard to let that thing go.
It's so hard.
It's a suited king in your hand, and all you got to do is call $5 to win 30, and generally you don't get that free check all the way around.
Or, stay with me.
Yeah, I'm staying with you.
Buy 2 Powerball tickets and a PBR. Right now, Sean from Scranton could have so much money that he could build his own Dunder Mifflin in Scranton.
Or
go to work there, and then he could tell people, yes, I do work for Dunder Mifflin.
Or you squeeze everyone by re-raising pre-flop and get isolated with the ace-king, continue bet on the flop, he folds the ace-king, and you win everything.
Okay.
Another way to play it. But that's just, you know, playing the person really and not the... Because really, a $7 raise, what kind of hand could he have? And everyone else just calls. What kind of hand can they have? They didn't re-raise, so you can get most of them out with a re-raise here. Make it 40 to go pre-flop. The guy folds, or he calls, and then you continue bet, thinking he has eight. You have aces, and then he folds. So another way to play it, just trying to give you alternatives there.
Absolutely.
All right, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@anteupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.